You are listening to.
Listening to.
You are listening to.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
BlackIsOnline.com.
Right.
What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of The Break, brought to you by the Black Is Network. This is Chris, one half of the brothers, Layman. Thanks for tuning in. So this is the fourth and final part of our conversation we had with our friend David, who works for the Los Angeles Police Department. Some of the things we touch on in this portion of the conversation are the larger racial issues, positive interactions with the police. A question was asked to David about whether there is a rite of passage when it comes to being a police officer, and the decision to shoot or not shoot is discussed as well. Really good conversation all around. Hope y'all enjoy it.
I think that if we were just talking about the police making mistakes, then that would be one thing, you know, because I think that that's always going to happen. You're always going to have the police making mistakes. But I think what we're faced with is that based on their preconceived ideas, those mistakes are disproportionately affecting a particular group of people, because of the biases that officer is bringing with them. Mm-hmm. And so mistakes in general, always going to happen. Mistakes against black men, that's a unique problem that represents a flaw in the mentality of law enforcement officers in the country. My argument, it's not law enforcement. It's a larger racial issue. I think that it comes to a head with law enforcement because those interactions are potentially fatal. But, you know, how many among us have never been in a store and not been followed around and not had somebody enter our lives, enter our space, who had the wrong mentality? You know, it does happen. And when that person happens to have a badge and a gun, the result can be fatal. So how do we, you know, scour that out of the police department without scouring it out of the population in general? I think there is definitely an issue with the way that that our community is viewed. I think the solution is elusive. I don't know. I don't know how you do that. I go to work every day, and I have these debates with the people that I work with, you know, trying to bring some enlightenment and some understanding to a world that has been tainted for them because of the work that they do and the things that they see. And you know, the reality is that people make generalizations. You know, we do it. They do it. Everybody does it. You know, anybody who's ever been, you know, robbed on the street probably was affected by that. You know, they've been robbed on the street, and now they're going to go a different way. They're not going down that street. Or when they see somebody that looks like the person that robbed them, they're going to cross the street and go a different way. And so we all carry those experiences with us, and they impact the way we behave in the future. And I think for police officers, it's worse. You know, they become more impacted by the things that they see, and they become more biased based on them because, you know, it's like a higher intensity of experience.
You know, that's a double-edged sword, right? Because the more I see black men get killed on TV, the more intense I get.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So absolutely.
It's just the same.
Absolutely.
As I said, I don't have interactions with the stuff to get myself in trouble too much, but you know, I'm not trying to die from driving down the street.
Right, right. And you obviously you shouldn't, and you shouldn't have that fear, and that's the part that, like, you know, that's why I do this job. You know, I do this job because you shouldn't be afraid. And you know, I used to get in trouble because I didn't like writing tickets. I didn't like writing tickets because I felt like tickets were stupid. But like, I would stop somebody and they were cool, and I was like, okay, this guy's cool. You know, he's a regular dude. He's going to work. You know, he doesn't need a ticket. You know, I get it. You know, I recognize that, you know, tickets are a more effective means at controlling traffic and, you know, unsafe traffic patterns than warnings. I know that. I know that people who get warnings tend to continue their own bad behavior, and that if they get a ticket, they tend to actually stop. So tickets are more effective at controlling traffic, improving traffic safety. I get it. I just didn't like writing them. I didn't care. And so the idea is that there needs to be positive interactions to offset the negative interactions. You have no positive interactions to draw from. You have no, like, oh, it's cool, because the last 10 times it was cool. And that's what we need. We need positive interaction. We need mechanisms to have people exposed to police and law enforcement in a manner that's not confrontational, in a manner that's not, I'm here to take you to jail, in a manner that's, you know, builds legitimacy in the relationship.
I was going to ask, are there, just for my peace of mind, David, with you having interacted with so many officers that do have this implicit bias, is that more common than not? Because I feel like just being in LA, and maybe this is just me being short-sighted in this situation, I feel like we live in one of the most diverse cities, period. And granted, Riverside can be a bit of the boonies, but I mean, my grandmother has lived there pretty much my whole life. There's people of color there too. Do you find that is there an overwhelming majority of white officers that come to work every day with this bias, or do you have more of them who are more realistic and understand and have interacted with people of color and are just, I mean, for lack of a better word, just more cool and understand? Or are more of them fearful of us because they lack a regular interaction? Like, where do the numbers lie?
Yeah,
are we
hard.
Looking at, is it 50-50? Is it 60-40? Yeah, like, what are we dealing with here?
You know, I mean,
because I've noticed over the last week, since Dallas, the police presence in LA is kicked up.
Yeah.
Like, you got police on motorcycles in pairs everywhere. I'm seeing more women, interestingly enough. The unicorns. And I was like, maybe they're putting them out because I don't know if they're emotionally more stable in a volatile situation or what. But I'm definitely seeing a kicked up police presence, and I'm sure that's for a good reason. For us as a community, what are we dealing with? Are we dealing with a police department that is like 80% biased, afraid, scared when they interact with us?
It feels like it.
I would say no. I would say that...
That's that get out of free pass talking.
I would say it's not that high. I think that... it's definitely higher than it should be.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. I think there are different levels. I think there are different levels of comfort and familiarity among white officers. I think there are, white officers who are... went to local high schools, lived in LA their whole lives, have a different perspective, and they're just kind of like, you know, it's cool. Everything is everything. And I think that there are officers who come here from out of state, you know, came here from Idaho to join the LAPD because, LAPD is the best and so awesome. I'm here. I am.
And founded on some questionable principles, which I totally want to talk about, but I feel like that'll have you here for like a whole nother hour. Is that ever addressed, David? The fact that LAPD was founded on some very racist principles. And are those principles ever, have they changed? Are they ever challenged?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are, I mean, there's an effort. There's an effort to be more sensitive, to be more aware. Look, the headquarters for the Los Angeles Police Department was Parker Center. Mm-hmm. And they built a new headquarters for the Los Angeles Police Department. It has no name. It's the Police Administration Building.
Okay.
And so people said, oh, well, why isn't it Parker Center? And it's, oh, you know, yeah, Chief Parker was a racist asshole.
Right, right.
And we're not going to name anything else after him.
Right.
So, you know, there is a little bit of, you know, okay, we used to be a certain way. And
disassociate ourselves from that.
We're not, I mean, yeah, that's where we came from. That's what we were. But let's not do that again. And so there's that. I mean, there is an effort. Again, you know, I mean, I went to a white college. You know, I went to school in D.C. And there was,
what up, D.C.?
and there was a dynamic. You know, I mean, I think any black person who goes to, you know, goes away to school to a, you know, predominantly white, you know, university, they have a certain experience, right? Mm-hmm. And there is the, oh, wait, you're not what they said you were. Mm-hmm. You know, really? Where look, you're so regular and you're so articulate and you're, you know,
so well spoken.
That whole experience. and I think, you know, that says, like, that's the white American's experience. You know, I mean, outside of your urban centers, you know, where white people have a lot of exposure and they, you know, they live in an urban community, you know, that is kind of their song. You know, they don't know that, you know, black America is not this media monster. And so I think that when you're dealing with people who aren't, as I mentioned before, I have an issue with the level of education required for law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you're dealing with people who haven't had that experience, that exposure to people different from themselves.
Mm-hmm. And, which sometimes college provides.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're dealing with a lot of people who don't, they mean well, I guess, maybe we can say. But they just lack the exposure. They lack the experiential knowledge to really personalize their experience with the communities that they serve. And I think that you know, I hesitate to call them, you know, racist. I think they're ignorant. I think that they're very naive. But I don't think that there's hate in them.
But there's fear.
There is fear. The unknown. There's fear of the unknown. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess for me, I wish there was, and I don't know if there's any effort to implement this. I wish there was something. I think what all of us are feeling is that when these situations happen, like for me in this moment, you're a unicorn. Very rarely do we hear police speak up and say, we know that these issues exist. This is not who we are. There's never a segment of the police population that gets up and says, we don't agree with what these guys did. What they did was wrong, and they do not reflect us. They do not reflect us when we put this uniform on. Just, it seems as if everybody gets quiet and silent. And as we know, the silence is a complicit high five or a support for, you know, said situation. And I think for me as a mother of a black son, I would love to hear more policemen of all races say when these things happen, as those of us who are black folks, when this Dallas shooting took place, say that black man doesn't represent me. His feeling and what he did was not right. He doesn't represent how I feel in this fight. I would love to hear more cops stand up and say the same thing. Like, is there an effort for that to happen? Because I think if we heard more of that, you would have, it would start the building blocks for the community to say, we have to change our relationship with the police. We have to perhaps get more of our people inside of this organization so that they can be of assistance in our community. And so that, it will take years, but that eventually we have that fantastic relationship between the community and law enforcement, the way we talked about when our conversation first started, where you have the police who walks the beat and he knows the community. He knows people by name. He knows this person's child. He has relationships with the people in the community that he serves, he or she serves. I think the steps that it will take to get there, one of the things that can start it is having the good policeman stand up and say, we don't agree with what just happened there. We don't agree that it's okay to kill a 12-year-old, whether or not you recognize that's a real weapon or not. We don't agree that a man being pulled over for a traffic stop should have lost his life. We don't agree with that. And these cops that bring these biases to work every day, these cops that go out into the field with this attitude and practice in this way, do not reflect who we are and the values that we carry. Do you envision or see that happening in any way, shape, form, or fashion? Or am I living the pipe?
Yeah, what I'm trying to think of is
to move to Canada. Is there,
what I'm trying to think of is there a public forum? Because generally speaking, police officers don't say anything about anything.
Right.
It's a community that, you know, look, the department, they handle talking to the media. And if you ask me, I don't know. I know nothing.
Right.
And I think that is born out of a fear of being misinterpreted. I think it's born out of a fear of being reprimanded mm-hmm. by the department for not, you know, being in line, which I don't think is necessarily valid because the department has no policy against anybody saying anything to the media.
Mm-hmm.
Again, one of the classes I teach to the recruits is media relations.
Mm-hmm.
And really, any person from the media can ask any officer anything they want. And that officer can answer the question. Sometimes it puts them on the spot because, you know, keep in mind, you know, they may not have the confidence to answer the question the way that they feel would be appropriate. So they may just kind of shy away from being moralized like that. But there's nothing saying that they can't. There are organizations, there are black law enforcement organizations. The Los Angeles Police Department has OJB, which is Oscar Joel Bryant Foundation. And they are more likely to say, hey, you know, this is how we feel. You know, we're an organization and we're made up of law enforcement.
What is this organization? What's OJB?
The Oscar Joel Bryant Foundation.
Can you explain a little bit?
It's an organization of black police officers that really just tries to promote, you know, the success of black officers and bringing kind of the black officer side to the administration, to the department, to kind of an NAACP, if you will, within the police department.
Okay.
So that organization may have a different, you know, statement than the department itself, but they don't necessarily have a form to, you know, really get that message out to the to the world.
Hmm.
I think that, in general, the community of law enforcement is just one that does not speak up, probably for a couple of different reasons in terms of being in a paramilitary organization where insubordination is a thing. Whereas, like, if you work somewhere else, that's not a thing. you know, I think that people are just a little gun shy about, you know, speaking out and saying something that would be on a level more than just their own individual perspective, you know, kind of creating a group of people who have a voice that would say something. I don't think it's impossible. I think that you might see some divergence in the police department. You might see some groups of police officers saying, you know what, I don't agree with that. I think that was messed up. But I don't think you'll see it on a huge scale because at least right now there isn't a forum for it. There isn't a way for them to get out there and get their message heard.
I was going to ask if you know off top, are there
What programs or things that you know of by LAPD that are promoting community policing that you know off top that probably deserve more assistance or more funding?
Yeah, I mean, the chief just created an entire division. I mean, a division is a pretty big deal. It's you know, we have 21 geographic divisions right here. We're in Southwest Division. And so we also have other divisions like, Robbery Homicide Division. But like a division is a pretty significant dedication to a particular cause. And we just created the Community Relations Division. Now, every geographical division, meaning every area in the city that has a police station, has a community relations unit within it. And that's where your senior lead officers work. And they're your local police officer who you can kind of contact with, you know, non-emergency issues and that kind of stuff. And then this community relations division is dedicated to this concept of really improving relations with the various communities, whether it be the Black community or the LGBTQ community or, you know, whatever the community is within the city, really trying to take a model where they listen to the community to how they want to be policed and kind of make policy decisions based on that. Now, I haven't seen any fruits of that labor in terms of I haven't seen any real policy changes or, any sweeping, you know, reforms that have come out of it. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, the formation of the division is kind of the chief trying to say, hey, look, I'm trying to do something. I'm trying to do something to improve the relationship, to improve the ways that officers are interacting with people, and trying to increase those positive interactions. Again, you know, you change a policy, you can implement something and then you kind of have to wait a while and see, you know, if it kind of works and if people bite, and if it has an effect. I think there are efforts being made, especially at the top, because, if you're the chief of police and you get it and you're like, okay, I hear you. Okay. You know, there's a problem. I got it. And then you go and tell your officers, look, there's a problem. So do this different. They're like, no, there isn't.
That's a good, I'm going to get in right there on that point you just made. As a police officer, what is your overall goal in having that occupation?
My goal in having the occupation is to improve the way that we are policed. When I became a police officer, it was because it was either that or going to law school, right? I mean, I was a criminal justice major.
See that?
I was a criminal justice major, and I was thinking about going to law school, and I had huge issues with the criminal justice system. You know, I was studying the slavery to Jim Crow to incarceration, you know, all of the issues that we all have identified with the criminal justice system. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, I should be an attorney and I should go out and fight these battles. And I started thinking, that's so after the fact. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, this guy got arrested, got shot, got whatever. And then the lawyers come in and they're trying to help out. You know, oh, okay, well, we're going to get you some money. We're going to, you know, whatever. And I was thinking, you know, where the rubber meets the road is right there on the street. Right there in the street on that day when that car is pulled over, that's where it matters. That's where the difference is made. Because, you know, these civil trials are 4 years after the event, you know.
Right.
And so I said, well, look, you know, I feel like I have the ability. You know, I have the strength of character, the strength of mind to persevere, to maintain my principles throughout the process. And I want to see if I can make a difference, if I can go in there and change the way that at least some people experience law enforcement. And I think I've been able to do that. I mean, I've worked internal affairs. I worked for the mental evaluation unit dealing with the mentally ill for 6 years. I teach the academy now, trying to kind of put that seed in the mind of officers that are coming on the job. And so, you know, kind of my focus has been, you know, trying to, be the change, you know, to steal Gandhi's quote, just, you know, to really try to you know, gain some understanding on both sides. You know, why is this happening? What are the issues and the concerns that are leading to this mentality? And then, you know, what can we do about it, if anything?
You know, we all know that there are fantastic police officers, as demonstrated by that new internet sensation cop. Mm-hmm. That's awesome, right, Tommy something. Yeah. But we know that there's way more like that. And I think that the media is implicit in this, too, and, you know, portraying just the bad stuff, just like they portray the bad stuff with us. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a good dad. There are dads out here in this world, black dads that are right. excellent, but you don't see that. You see the other side. But, you know, I you know, applaud you for it, for that. That's a noble thing. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when I joined the military, I did because there wasn't nothing else to do. I was thinking, I left college, like, I'm just doing
it. I got to do something.
But, you know, but I appreciate the fact that, you know, you did that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we acknowledge that there are more officers right. out there that do that, but they're not the ones that are pulling people over, you know.
Right. If they were all bad, we would be in a lot more trouble.
Right.
I'm not leaving the house.
Would you know, Dave, or have you ever heard of these particular shootings that's been happening being like a type of initiation or something to where it could be that's maybe the possibility why more cops don't really take a stand against their own, because they may have had to have gone through something like having dirt on them, you know what I'm saying, so to speak. You know
well,
what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think,
to actually, like how you were saying,
okay.
The guy that goes out
yeah.
to do the big game hunting,
yeah,
and then, you know what I'm saying, the guy that's...
So, first of all, I mean, most police officers never shoot anybody, right?
Okay.
I mean, you know, the vast majority of police officers never fire their gun on the line of duty.
Okay.
That's
good to know.
To some degree, that is a rare event.
That's good to know.
The idea, though, of kind of, you know, kind of a rite of passage, I want to say is kind of a thing
okay.
in law enforcement. And not so much with a shooting. I'm sorry?
Like hazing?
No, I mean, not really hazing in the sense that they're going to make you do it. But I think there's a certain legitimacy that comes with like a use of force. Or kind of, you know, fighting with somebody and getting kind of down in the dirt and rolling around with them. And I think that officers have kind of a little bit more respect for somebody who's kind of been in it,
right,
so to speak.
Like them, possibly.
Yeah. And,
so
and
they don't have like this squeaky clean image of, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And we also want to know that person has your back, you know,
yeah,
they can kind of meet the challenge.
Yeah, I get it.
And I guess that's probably not much different in the military in the sense that, like, you know, you don't really know what that person's going to do. You know, you have like a North Hollywood shootout, right? You got these guys with assault rifles and they're shooting up the place and you don't want your partner to be the one hiding in the car. Like, oh my God, they're shooting out there.
Right. Right.
It's like, no man, come on. This is what we do.
Right.
Let's go.
Right.
And so, you know, you do kind of, there's kind of a rite of passage kind of showing that you have the guts,
right?
That you have what it takes to meet the challenge. And I don't think it's not racial in its breakdown. It's just, you know, you have to kind of show that you're willing to kind of get down when you need to get down.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that is a thing.
Okay.
I think that is a thing. And I think that for some people, based on their experience and their perspective, that might look a certain way.
Right.
And I think that, you know, for those people, like they might be looking a little bit more in terms of, can I shoot this guy and not do I have to shoot this guy?
Hmm.
And there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you know what I, because the unit in the police academy that teaches police officers when to shoot and when not to shoot is a tactics unit, and they teach when you can shoot somebody, And that's, I mean, that's all they can do, you know, from an administrative, you know, organizational standpoint, you know, that's all they can do. And kind of when I get them, I kind of present them with the, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. And it has to be your last resort. And it has to be, you know, okay, I have no choice at this point, and you've put me in a position where now I have to shoot you. And it should be like, damn you for doing that to me. Damn you for putting me in this situation where now I have to shoot you. And I think that you know, some people don't have that mentality. They have the, oh, he's reaching for it. I get to shoot him now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is a culture thing. I think that's there are people who fall into that law enforcement culture.
Will we be dishonest with ourselves? We don't leave the police officer off the hook for right now, but will we be dishonest with ourselves if we didn't say that our community does portray a certain element?
What you talking about? Be specific, because I don't know what you mean.
For instance, now I'm going to get in trouble for this probably because I already got in trouble with it on our show, my show. But if you have young black kids that are running around that may be very intelligent, but they're trying to be the fashion and look a certain way, which is fine because everybody can look however they want to, and that's the key word, how they want to. You don't think that a lot of our folks go above and beyond and portray in a certain thing that we might not really be to get us in trouble, for the media to do that, for other people to look at us and feel afraid and all that kind of stuff?
It doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter.
Okay.
But it does. We can say that.
I'm just asking.
But I feel saying, like...
No, it's a different it subject.
Matter. It shouldn't matter.
But just how he said, there's some people who are like, yo, I need to know that in a certain situation. I mean, it's not like, well, just the cops do it. We all do it. When you're with your friends, you like, if you know you got a homie who, if it's time to, if something happened and it gets real, he going to punk out. You going to feel some kind of way. You know what? You just fell down my level of friendship. Now, I mean, but that's real. You know, if you get into a fight with somebody and your boy over there like, oh, I don't want to do that. You're like, are you seriously just let me get my ass kicked? We ain't friends no more. Like, it gets
not,
like that.
That's not what I'm saying. Let me get at it though for real. If you're driving down a certain street or you're a certain part of town, are you not a little bit more careful? Are you not a little bit more concerned? Are you not a little bit more observing of where you are and what's going on?
Listen, even
she's looking at me. I'm just posing the question, devil's advocate style, you know, that's all.
So the reality of the situation is crime exists, period.
Right.
Crime exists. I get that. Crime exists in every single community. And whether or not someone's bias leads them to think I'm committing a crime more than someone else, that's their bias. Why do I have to change anything? I don't care if it's a hood, my pants, my song. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Just like the bias that this other person, this white person or this Asian person isn't a threat and they're running around, running amok, killing people. Like, it just, it doesn't matter. That's why I said it doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter. Because I live in a so-called good neighborhood, and we went through this horrible phase, horrible, with people breaking in the middle of the day. You know why? Because they knew we went to work. Mm-hmm. They knew we went to work, and our apartments were easy prey in the middle of the day. And they stumbled upon some old lady and beat the crap out of her. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter. Crime exists. And what you said to me is like that whole idea of, I live in this neighborhood and it never happens here.
That's gone.
Get that crime out. Is everywhere. Crime exists.
White collar, blue collar, black collar. Crime exists. Red collar, exactly. Collar. Yeah.
And it's everywhere.
Everywhere.
You guys, David is giving us like 2.5 hours of his time, which is beautiful. And he has a pregnant wife and a little one at home, so I don't want to hold him too much longer. But does anybody have any questions that they would like to ask him in summation? I will hope that you're open to coming back and talking to us as things.
About anything.
That might be tough.
Bring, see if you can bring a white officer with you. That would
that
be
ooh, that, ooh, okay. Let me see. Okay. No, that's a challenge.
That would be the thing.
That's a challenge. Okay. Let me. Let me see what I can do.
We appreciate your time. I think all of us here, frustration or not, want to see progress because we are parents, soon to be parents, educators, the whole bit. And I think we think a lot about not so much our safety, even though that definitely is a thought, but our kids, future generations, wanting this to be, wanting our children when they are our age, not dealing with the same sort of issue that we're dealing with. Because for us, that's no progress. And it's feeling like, you know, for what our grandparents and parents went through to be in this space right now showcases a lack of progress. So what can we do that will make the future truly different than what it is now? So you just being willing to participate in the conversation for us is a very good step in that direction. So thank you.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Thank you for being such a good friend and neighbor.
Right on with the ride on.
Right. All right.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Is Break. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up, let us know what you think. You can reach us on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, on Twitter at Black Is Online. You can hit us up via email at kc@blackisonline.com. Leave a message on the hotline, 323-455-4219. You can always check us out on our website, blackisonline.com. Thanks again.